Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Today is the day we do Mythbusters, and the co-host is Chris Rosini. He is also the editor of the RonPaulLibertyReport.com. Chris, nice to see you this morning.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. It's great to be with you again. And today we're going to be discussing the rickety European Union. Now, we often hear, especially from neocon warmongers here in the United States, that they really desire a Europe that is whole, free, and at peace. Now, very few, I hope, would object to the being free and at peace. But when we get to the word whole, that's when things get a little bit tricky. So I have a few questions for you, Dr. Paul. What's in it for the American war hawks specifically? Why do they want a European Union that is whole? And is it not even necessary to take a bunch of countries with different languages, cultures, and regional identities and just throw them into this political union? Is it even necessary to do such a thing to have freedom and peace?
Well, the first thing one should think about when they talk about whole and bringing groups together, it is equivalent to saying big government. We like big government. And it's part of the international movement toward the New World Order that George H.W. Bush confirmed many years ago, although that theory and that movement has been around for a long time. It came out in the open under the first George Bush presidency. And whole means that the bigger the better. And of course, if you're a libertarian, the smaller the better. We want to always strive toward individual sovereignty and have the individual governing one's own life. But if you're talking about whole, and in this case, they're talking about the whole, means that the European Union has to be a whole and unified. And like you mentioned in introduction, there's a lot of different countries there. My argument early on was it's not going to work. There's different languages, different cultures, and traditionally the French didn't get along real well with the Germans, and the British didn't get along with so-and-so, and everybody had a different culture, and I think that is proven to be true. This does not mean that one should strive for isolationism and avoidance with other people, because I think there's much to be said about integration of cultures and countries as long as it's done absolutely voluntarily, with no coercion, no subsidies, and no force from the government. And the European Union, in many ways, ran roughshod over the people, even when the people were trying to oppose it. And now, lately, you know, they're now opposing it with Brexit and having Britain wanting to leave the European Union. That's a different story, because the people who want it, they want this whole union, which is the opposite of the smaller units. And of course, we went through this same process in the United States, and we were much more culturally mingled. There were differences in people who came to this country, but they weren't as distinct as in Europe. But our Constitution and our early history was all natural for integration in a natural fashion, and that was a consequence of the way they set up the Constitution and the states. The states were to remain independent, and nobody was supposed to make the United States a whole and unified and one central government running things. That's what we ended up with. We have a mess. And it might not right now be socially and culturally as difficult here in this country, but we have our problems. But in Europe, it's a real mess, and the neocons are concerned because there are some neocons that didn't care that much about Brexit, but boy, they are concerned if there's any attack on the unity of the military might. And of course, EU is closely related to NATO, and of course, we're part of that whole group, the North Atlantic Treaty Agreement, and that's what they're concerned about. They're concerned about anything that they can do, whether it's NAFTA or CAFTA or WTO, United Nations, IMF, or the EU. They're always moving toward universal government for the world, because they work on the assumption that people don't know what to do with their money or their lives, and they need smart people, and they will take care of everybody and make sure everything is equal and fair. And in order to do that, they have to destroy individualism and coerce people into being a member of the whole and being very obedient. So obviously, I have great trouble with this whole concept of the whole. I'm looking for more individualism and individual sovereignty.
Yes, let's look at the other phrases that were used. And we'll ask, is the European even at peace? You know, the European Union follows the U.S. into these unwinnable, immoral wars that are seemingly unending. And as a result, they've reaped what you warned against many years ago, blowback. European nations have received blowback from terrorism, and they've had to deal with these massive migrations from war-torn areas, which have led to assaults and rapes of native European people. So are they even at peace, Dr. Paul?
Well, this is obviously a big problem, and I think it's a disaster on what is happening right now, because there is the principle of blowback that they won't accept. And it's blowback both in a social sense and a military sense. There's the military threat. We know a little bit here, but it's minor compared to what's going on in Europe. And these conditions produce conditions that are very, very dangerous. And also economically, consequences of war also is the prime cause of this migration. And it's not a lenient or a friendly way of allowing people to come and visit and join a new country, but it's subsidized. It's controlled by government. It's world government, the world plan to make the whole world a whole. So this is in part of their plan to allow people to come. And they end up with not peace. They end up with constant fear and propaganda of how dangerous it is, and another justification. Well, we have to have a war. We have to have a war against ISIS and a war against somebody else. And this is what it produces. Now, peace is something that we talk a whole lot about on this station, as well as in the Institute for Peace and Prosperity, believing that the more liberty we have and the more free trade we have and more respect for the individual, the greater the chance for peace and prosperity. The greater the size of the government and the intervention and control by special interests, the less chance there is for peace. And right now we're seeing, especially in Europe, the consequence of this theory that you can forcibly integrate people, and then they get into cultural things, and there's the term cultural Marxism, where they get into social things and force people over political correctness, which we have our fair share of in this country. And it's exactly opposite of what a free society would be all about. They take a goal, which sort of sounds noble, take care of the hungry people and the people who are suffering from war, and it sounds like it's a humanitarian. Yet they fail to look at, why is it doing this? Are we subsidizing it? Is it the government is creating these conditions? The fact that we're in the Middle East and we put pressure on the European countries to come, and even if it's a minor force that comes to help, it's a major thing for antagonism. So, you know, whether it's the French or the British or others who send a few troops over there to fight these wars, it still causes the resentment. It causes the problems of people suffering. It causes the massive migration. It causes the problem of economic conditions. And right now, I think we're facing a serious problem, from this worldwide, because I see the economy as being globally run in a bad manner. Having a global economy run on sound money and free markets, that's completely different. But this is why we're in a bad position right now, and why it was very dangerous embarking on this, and now we see the danger of it. From the migrants that they come in and commit crimes, it's a lawless condition, and they promote it as if they have a religious belief in it, and they try to play on people's sympathy and say, well, if you don't do that, if you don't care about about this, that means you must hate people. Well, I would think the people who would look for peace and prosperity and personal liberty would have a better answer to this. I think the answer is the correct answer. The trouble is we haven't been able to combat those in control of our government. But this system we have today is breaking down, and hopefully more people will pay attention to the philosophy that would give us peace and prosperity.
Next, we'll cover the next phrase, and that was free, or EU nations actually free. Former Reagan administration official Paul Craig Roberts has a quote that I'm going to read here. He says, quote, "They have a parliament for show, but it has no power. The power is in a non-elected commission that makes the decisions. So the government of the EU is removed from the European people," end quote. And if we talk about trade, free trade, much like the United States, there's thousands and thousands of pages of regulations, which is not free trade, it's government-managed trade. So is the word free just a rhetorical term for the European Union, much like it's become here in the United States?
Yeah, it's actually not only rhetorical, it's exactly opposite of what they're doing, because the bigger the government, the less freedom the individuals have. And that has been the movement for a long time. You know, people believe that we are an exceptional nation, and we should spread our exceptionalism through force if we have to, because we're so powerful and so important. But the problem there is that we have been successful in spreading Americanism to a large degree, and that's what Europeans were trying to emulate, not when we had good qualities of free markets and sound money. They're trying to emulate us how we nationalized our states when we had state sovereignties and a system that was imperfect, but it dealt with the problems, the local problems, much better. So over a course of a couple hundred years, that was finally eroded, and we have a strong nationalist government, and the people don't have anything to say about it. That's what this election is about. The people are sick and tired of what's happening because the people aren't heard. The bureaucracy is heard. A corrupt court system is heard. Too many laws and too many bureaucrats. That is all out there, and the people are very frustrated. So the people in America have lost control, but the people of Europe are just waking up. Even though there were some warnings early on, you know, 20, 30 years ago when they were establishing EU and the European currency, people warned about this. But this is what is happening right now. It has not worked. And yet there's still this strong motivation by the neoconservatives of the world, really, that want to promote this and say this is the solution. Yes, it's sort of like when we complain about the solution to our economic crisis of 08 and 09, coming on by too much debt and too much spending and too much printed money, so we just do a lot more of it. And that's more or less politically what we're doing in Europe and the Middle East. The worse it gets, and the more it looks foolish we're doing, and interventionism doesn't work, and it violates our freedoms, the more we push it. But it'll come to an end because it's not viable. Just as Mises argued, the economic system of the Soviet system would fail, and it did. And it certainly improved after that, although there's still a lot of improvement left for all of us. But we ought to be more prepared for what's coming, whether it's in Europe or here, because in that sense, it is a global economy. And it's globalized mainly because of the power and the influence and the wealth of this country and our ability to issue the fiat currency of the world. So there will be ramifications, but also tremendous opportunities to present to the world another system of government that people have known about, but it has not done well in the last several years, if not the last 100 years. There's been some backtracking. So I look forward to the day that this is fully recognized, how deeply flawed the economic and foreign policy of our country and other countries really is, so that we can institute something much better.
Finally, Dr. Paul, we'll finish up here. We started with a phrase that the political meddlers of the world, they desired a Europe that is whole, free, and at peace. They are not free and they're not at peace. And now with Brexit, the whole is starting to come apart. We know that Greece is in bad shape and that Italy's banking system is in big trouble. So, Dr. Paul, it's very reasonable to assume that another major financial crisis will occur someday. When exactly, we don't know, but it's bound to occur. When that happens, Dr. Paul, what can we expect to happen to the European Union?
Well, I have predicted when it was being organized that it wouldn't work, and it's not working. And then when Brexit passed, with a vote, with the British vote, we also knew that didn't mean the next day it was gone. It takes several years. But to me, it was a significant vote because the people were speaking out, and that will be the trend. And whether, and some people criticize and say, Ron predicted that this would end. Well, it didn't end. Well, it's not going to end overnight. It's going to take a while. And I think it will end. It will finally collapse. And let's just hope that they don't go back in Europe to fighting and killing each other. Although we're preparing for that. We're putting more and more troops in Eastern Europe and nuclear weapons. It was shocking to find out that we still have more than 50 nuclear warheads in Turkey. No, it could end very, very badly. But I don't think Brexit is going to be held together because just as socialism doesn't work because they lose the pricing structure, I think this whole notion of compelling different cultures to blend together by force just won't work. So I think there will be a lot of poverty and a lot of chaos in times to come. And there was one statistic I saw the other day that sort of symbolizes how big this is and how international it is. You know, I mentioned just a little while ago that debt was a big problem in the 2009 crisis, but there's a lot more debt now. Right now, corporate debt throughout the world is $75 trillion. And I'm just thinking of all the debt that exists, whether it's our national debt, our foreign debt, student debt. And this is around the world. Everybody's living with debt and everybody's papering it over and they're doing it with zero interest rates. I can't conceive that there has ever been in the history of the world anything so out of sync. And yet, you know, superficially people are saying, well, we're getting along fine, especially in this country, but it's very, very vulnerable. I think the underpinnings of a free society have been knocked out and the collapse will come. And the whole question will be, will we come to our senses and decide that we don't need the new world order that has been imposed on us, or are we going to have a new order based on individual liberty? That is, to me, the only question. What should the role of government be? And as far as I'm concerned, it should be very, very limited. It should be designed to protect liberty and nothing else. And that will take care of most of our problems and get off the backs of people and let them go back to work. Let them keep what they earn and return the incentives. Believe me, if that message could be heard around the world, I think we would then have a chance to achieve peace and prosperity for many, many people. And Chris, I want to thank you today for being with us on Mythbusters.
Thank you very much, Dr. Paul.
And I want to thank our audience today for joining us for this program. And please come back and see us soon.